Step Into the Trademark, your go-to podcast for everything marketing in the trades. Hosted by award-winning industry marketing experts Sarah Gerardo from Remarketable and Eric Thomas from Rival Digital. Together, we're here to unite the worlds of trades and marketing, bringing you insights, stories, and strategies from the heart of the industry. Whether you're a trade professional, a marketing expert, or somewhere in between, this is the place for you. Listen in as we're here for the big ideas, the game changers, and the everyday successes. Because at The Trademark, we're with the trades and for the trades.
Well, hello again out there, world. Welcome back to another episode of The Trademark. My name's Eric Thomas. Alongside me, my fellow host, Sarah. Sarah, how are you doing?
Doing great. Super excited for today. Today, we have Amber McKee, world-renowned marketer in the trades. Look at her when I said that. Well, Amber, tell us a little bit about the noble. So tell us about you.
So Amber McKee, I am the founder of Amber's Home Service Marketing. I've worked in the home service industry, driving marketing and revenue generating strategic marketing plans for about 8 years. I was with a large company that when I started, we did about $2 million in revenue. When I exited, about 240. When I started, we had two locations. When I exited, 11. And I led all of the marketing efforts the entire time I was there. I exited that and started into Amber's Home Service Marketing, where I help businesses really map out their revenue goals and the path to achieve them. The responsible, economically responsible, effective path to achieve them. I have a lot of experience with different sizes of businesses all over the country and pretty much everything home services. So I understand, you know, the limitations and the opportunities in our industry and have a really large sample size of what works, what doesn't, and what's coming up on the horizon that we need to lean into to continue the growth that most of my clients have experienced.
And what's the one biggest opportunity that you are seeing out there with your clients right now?
Diversifying out of like traditional pay-per-click, radio, TV, and leaning more into like YouTube, OTT, Amazon Prime, and optimizing and understanding and also integrating a lot of the tools that Marketing Pro has continuously developed so that you can see how everything's performing and make smart, informed decisions very proactively to drive the different lines of business as needed. You know, in our industry, we have capacity, which is humans that are running our calls. We have logistics. And we have seasonality, and all of those things can make things look, as a marketer, driving leads a little more complicated. And also, we need to, as marketers, shift our messaging and our platforms based on how we can operationally deliver on the leads that we're driving and have a really good, tight understanding of what that is. And Marketing Pro, the last couple of years, has really advanced our ability to see the metrics, determine what we need to drive. And now you're like layer the school stuff where you can affect your campaign weight almost real time and adjust what you're marketing and your campaign weight to really drive the leads that you need for the capacity that you have for the human, you know, touch industry that we're in.
Yeah, that makes sense. And so like, how do you plan their capacity? I know that's one of your strong sweet spots. So what guidance would you give, like three tips to someone just starting out and they're like, oh my God, we have to plan for people? Like what tips would you give them?
Take your ops managers to lunch and get to know them really well. Like go to coffee if you like happy hour, take them to happy hour. Really like get a strong line of communication with them so that you're both vulnerable and transparent what you can deliver and when. Also watch your booking percentage and your cancellation rates. So if as a marketer, we may at the beginning of the year, we're going to drive $1 million of plumbing revenue in January, and then we get to January and we only have 10 plumbers. that equates to $30,000. Or I'm sorry, $300,000. No, it's 30. Hold on, 30. I'm not great at math. $90,000 is in plumbing. So like having that, like, okay, this is what we plan for, like these pie in the sky goals, which when we were planning, we defined what our average ticket was and the technicians that we need to run those calls. But what do we really have and how do we turn up and down marketing so we don't blow our EBITDA at the end of the month because we've overspent on things we can't deliver on, mm-hmm. or so we don't lose a bunch of technicians because we didn't know we could run more calls and didn't turn up appropriately the marketing to drive leads.
Yeah. Speaking of like capacity and planning marketing, you mentioned, you have a very, very impressive resume with the work you did, when you were working internally. What was that like? What was the pivotal moment, from when you said you started, it was at 2 million when you left at 240, mm-hmm. like what, mm-hmm. What revenue growth was the big pivotal moment where like it really just took off, and what did that look like from a capacity planning standpoint?
So we got more dialed into automatic reporting that was sent to us daily, and that got better and better as time went on, so that essentially we could look at all the data from all the different branches, because we had 11, by line of business every morning, and have an understanding of how we're pacing for revenue and also calls and leads. I would mm-hmm. say that was a pivotal moment from a leadership standpoint. You could then have a quick snapshot by the time you're done with your coffee of what you needed to drill in deeper and the guidance you needed to give and the changes you needed to make to realign your efforts to meet your goals.
And as a marketer, did you have to manage 11 different brands? And then how did you do that?
In that instance, I did not manage 11 different brands. And there's a couple of different instances. So what introduced me into the industry and where I am now, so I'll talk to both. So the experience that introduced me into the industry, there was one core brand, and then we would acquire businesses, run them until we operationally align them with our core brand, and then rebrand them and roll them in. So that was, that's tricky, but we also, like, from a marketing standpoint, it's kind of like our engine was running at full speed, and then we put stuff in it, and then when we remarketed, it ran full speed. So I didn't have to do a ton to drive revenue for them, because we were kind of like level setting them to make sure we prevented leakage through the customer journey, and we're, being as profitable as we can. And so I just did standardized campaigns, I understood seasonality, budgeted for the seasonality of the different markets. Over time I had a library of campaigns and just turned them on. Now, and we had a much smaller marketing team for that instance. Where what I do currently, of course, I'm a consultant. So everyone has a different brand. There's definitely themes in all of our businesses. But the operational costs for managing the marketing for the different brands is definitely higher. And we have mm-hmm. more marketing, people hands-on watching them, because they have to create different contents and different messaging for each brand.
I love talking about the seasonality aspect, of what we do. And, by the time this episode airs, we'll be a little bit into April. So what is just like some best practices you would share for contractors as they plan, their marketing for spring and for summer? Because I know there's a lot of contractors out there that don't do a full annual plan. They kind of mm-hmm. Run and gun and kind of adjust on the fly. So what are just some best practices as, we're in spring and looking ahead to summer to plan for that seasonality?
So one of the things I see happening, like operationally with marketing, is when we get into the summer months, we're so busy just trying to execute. It's like marketing is kind of secondary. So whereas it's hard to prepare and plan like one, ahead of time, look at 1 to 2 months and do everything you can to create a library of content that you think you'll need. If you're in the HVAC space, seasonality is going to affect you a lot more than it is like electrical or plumbing. So make sure you just have those campaigns prepared. And then if you are in the HVAC space and you have electrical and plumbing, also don't forget your siblings that are going to still need love during those peaks. And just make sure that you have consistency and running your sibling campaigns so you don't lose your eye on the ball. But then you're like, why are you guys here? You know, because they don't have any leads. So that, you know, map it out, have a playbook and some ads in your back pocket, because when you get into those changes, you're of course going to have operational challenges and you'll want to flip your campaigns. So what I've seen work is riding in with maintenance and then flipping to more opportunity, higher ticket campaigns. And once you start booking out like 2 and 3 days, then make that flip and switch to like more branding and quality and, you know, upgrading kind of campaigns so that you can try and get people that know they're in the market for a replacement, i.e. higher average ticket, to call you. Other things is also, I have found it most successful to pull marketing funds forward in the year into Q1 so that you have that win behind you when you're going through peak and do a lot of branding and brand building so people think of you when they have a problem. Other things is with your other trades. If you have a high influx of calls, like if someone needs an electrician and someone needs a plumber, they may just not wait on the hold. They may like hang up and call someone else. If someone has an HVAC system, they'll sit there like broken into heat. They're gonna wait on hold for you. So like press 1 for plumbing, press 2 for electrical, press 3 for HVAC is really effective to not choke out that like lead flow for those other trades.
Yeah.
Another one is make sure you're watching your marketing spend, because you get very busy. You can also overspend a lot on real estate and paperclip when you don't need the extra leads. So that's, you know, if you want to cherry pick your leads for the highest opportunity, that's one way to do it. And just overpay, or you cut back and streamline.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah. That's, yeah. I think you said a lot of great things. You said, A, have a marketing plan, be consistent, and then with your phones, have a great routing system for, you know, to make sure that you're getting the most profitable lead to where it needs to be at that time. And then also watching your spend, because yes, PPC and LSA and, you know, even your social media marketing, which is an element of a type of paid media like PPC, those can all go skyrocketing when customers have a problem. So, and if you don't have the capacity to run it, then you've just wasted spend, and that's a shame. So yeah, most definitely. I think that that's a great question and great answers for that. And so the right now in the industry, a lot of people are saying they're having a hard time with replacement. And I want to know what your thoughts are on that, and why do you think that that's happening?
So, you know, we did go through, our industry for HVAC replacements went through a time where we pulled, I believe, and reports on this, where we pulled replacements forward because of COVID, and people, you know, we had a freon change out, we had COVID. We had people with discretionary income, and instead of fixing, they replaced. So that kind of created a little bit of a lull. And then we have skyrocketing interest rates, economic insecurity. It's all going to pan out. What I'm reading is towards the end of next year, it's going to be another boom, but we do have rising cost of equipment next year. So yes, I'm seeing replacement be a challenge. Where I've seen people be effective is really offering good deal on replacement to differentiate themselves and really honing in on the value with their technicians and their sales techs on the value of replacing versus repairing and mapping that out. People are very value conscious now, especially if they're going to finance it. It's like 8% interest. Like, how much more am I going to pay? Well, if they really train the team to have all of scripting and understanding of what the customer's concerns are, and then show the value of replacement versus spending a lot of money repairing the system that you're going to have to replace again anyway. Those are wins that I'm seeing in people that are kind of overcoming the replacement issues.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. And also understanding that, you know, you're coming in to solve a problem that could be related to someone's health, and you don't want to scare them, but you want to like act as if they're your own mom or act as if they're your own, you know, family, because really like your HVAC, let's just take HVAC for a second. You're breathing air, right? And that air that you breathe matters greatly because, for an example, my son has asthma. Well, if I were to just repair a problem, would it really fix my entire solution or my need with my air? Like, the problem isn't just it's not turning on, it's producing a bad output. And so what I'm breathing in is not okay. And, you know, really relating it back to the human level of what's the problem statement that they see, but what's really going on mm-hmm. in the home, and breaking that down. And those are easy scripts that you can generate with AI just to even give you a basis. And then you go in, test the script, edit the script, and hone in on the process. So I think what you're saying is really like give them a good process for your comfort advisor or your salesperson or your technician, a good process of like, yeah, you're going to get these objections because, you know, interest rates are high, or because, you know, they haven't gotten their tax money back because they overspent in taxes or whatnot, and they're waiting for something. But the fact of the matter is every time that they wait, the price just keeps going up.
Well, and you kind of hit the nail on the head on a lot of it. It's like those lifestyle questions of people's comfort and really, you know, setting up the, or helping technicians understand that when they're walking into someone's home, it's their haven. And it's where they spend the bulk of their time, and their families, they're in the most intimate moments in their life, happen in that home. And, you know, understanding what type of lifestyle they're looking for in that home. It's not just HVAC, it's also plumbing and electrical, and how much that system actually affects people. I think people sometimes get used to hot and cold spots and allergies and, you know, water that isn't that great, and hot water and seats for to turn on and heat up. I moved about a year ago and I had like a lot of these problems and I was like, what is this? But those, you know, going into the with those lifestyle questions and gathering a complete understanding of what's important to the customer is, you're right, Sarah, super important. Because we're not just in the HVAC and plumbing business, we're in the home comfort business.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, most definitely. I think that's the great part. Were you going to say something?
Yeah. Yeah, just, yeah. And we're in kind of keeping the topic of replacements going. I feel like, you know, you're spot on. Like, being able to give them options is going to be huge, especially since, you know, marketed leads for replacements is, it's not quite as frequent as it was in previous years. We're seeing a lot of people leaning towards, at least from what I'm seeing, you know, in search volume and, you know, from what people are searching and what they're finding, you know, finding us for is towards repairs and service. So shifting, you know, the, you know, not the entire approach, but also, you know, just making sure that the focus isn't lost. Like, I know we all want those hot, perfectly qualified, ready to buy replacement leads. But, you know, just making sure that, like, you know, as marketers, we're adjusting and pivoting with, you know, with the way we're seeing, you know, consumer behavior and all that stuff moving towards is, you know, hitting the repair, or at least targeting repairs and giving yourself the opportunity. Because so many people, they want install leads, and then they strike out because they missed 10 opportunities for a replacement conversation because they didn't talk about repairs in their advertising or anything.
Right. And yeah, understanding that lifestyle and of the customer and what they comfort they want and need, and then understanding, you know, if you repair it, are you going to achieve that? If you repair it, are you just putting a Band-Aid on something that's going to break soon, and you're going to spend more in the long run, and also in that interim not reach your lifestyle goals or your comfort. And also, costs are going up next year again.
Mm-hmm.
All those things can help technicians down the journey, and providing technicians those trainings can help them then convert to replacements.
Yeah.
You got to date someone before you ask them to marry you.
Maybe. I don't know.
This is love. This is a Bachelor.
Yeah, Love is Blind.
Love is Blind was throwing me for a loop. I was like watching it and I was like, okay, I get this. And then, yeah. Everything is changing how we interact with relationships and interact with our consumers. You know, we give them what they want, hopefully, instead of what we want. And, and hopefully that drives what they need. But, you know, lifestyle goals, some people are just like surviving, right? And so they're like, what's a lifestyle goal? Like, one day I'll get there, but, you know, a Band-Aid might help them. It's just, I think it's about how you market for the repair, right? And what that message is that makes sense and resonates. Because you could be I know companies that are all repair companies. And, you know, and is that sustainable? I think that's my question. Like, how do you continue to grow at just repairing things? Because you obviously, I guess you'd get to go back out there again when it breaks. But
gosh,
would you be for the break?
I know of some contractors in my area here in Virginia that have been around for, you know, 60, 70 years and 2.5 million still. And their entire business is just built on a book of memberships. And it's just, they go do maintenance and maintenance and maintenance. And they've been around so long that like, just due to the nature of how, you know, equipment breaks down, those members turn into replacements, which is crazy to me to think that like, that's how some companies run and operate too. But like to hit on your point about messaging around repairs, like I was in Austin, Texas back in January visiting the Wizard of Ads and big Ryan Shute fan. And something that we were talking about a lot then when I was there was how if you can, there's it's like time, energy, and money are like the three like most valuable resources in this world. And the only one that you can't get back is time. You can get more energy, you can get more money, but you can't get more time. And so if you can solve one of those three problems through what you do and through your messaging, then, you know, folks are going to call you. And after hearing that, I adjusted a few of our campaigns that were around like emergency service and repairs. And the headline changes that we made, it was instead of saying like, call now for fast service, we changed it to say, we're already on our way. And those campaigns started performing exponentially better just because instead of saying, you know, call now and we'll help you out. What everyone else is saying, it changed it to something where it's like, oh, this is going to save me time. They're already on their way over here now. And so like that, I think little things like that, you know, focusing on ways to save your customers time, energy, and money in this year and probably early Q1, Q2 of next year as well, is going to really help, especially if you're trying to go after those service and repair calls.
Yeah. And understanding, you know, thinking about what your customer needs as the solution versus what you want to achieve, really stepping back and understanding that. And it's a lot of that's through asking questions.
Yeah. And really going back and looking at your customer database and saying, what did I leave on the table? Right. And what problems did they talk to me about in the notes? What problems did show up in the job types? What problems, you know, why was I out there? And then rehashing and nurturing those by giving them information onto, well, you know, last year we were out because you, I don't know, let's just say you had bad indoor air quality. And then you just keep telling them and informing them about that. Like, I think we forget about the rehash always having to be a closed deal right up front. It can be a nurture. And I think, yeah, maybe like hopefully that would help them understand that not everything's going to convert right away. Some things need a little bit more of that white glove service that continues.
Yeah. Those have a high value because you've already marketed that lead. You've already gone out there. You've already paid operationally to assess it. And then sometimes it's a sticker shock and people, you know, that's, you know, it's a big investment. It's probably one third largest ticket that you're going to pay for. And house, car, maintenance,
kids
in college. But the following up with that, to your point, Sarah, is highly profitable. It's probably one of the biggest opportunities by seeing company and doing it the right way. Don't just send an email, call them, mail them, have a campaign. You don't have like a crappy campaign. We were out there and you didn't choose. You're a standard company. You know, understand, you know, what was you asking it for? You can build all this out in Service Titan. You know, here's some more options. And then have different personality types following up with them. Because maybe there's just something that the customer, a solution the customer needed or wanted, but it wasn't really clear to the initial person. Whereas it may be clear to a different person. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm seeing like about a 10% rehash rate on those, which is fantastic. If that's right.
Yeah, it could totally... I think y'all are both spot on. Like, I think a lot of people, you know, especially if they don't know any better, if they just see, you know, a post or two on Facebook, think like, oh, I'm going to rehash and this is going to blow my business up. But like, I don't think this talked about enough where it's like, it doesn't always have to be a call to action in the rehash. It could simply be as little as saying Happy Easter. You know, here's a photo of our family at church on Sunday for Easter Sunday or whatever. You know, it doesn't have to always be Easter Sunday, 10% off. It could just be Happy Easter, or it could be if you're like me and you love Red Robin and everyone jokes about me loving Red Robin, sending your clients Red Robin gift cards on their birthday and saying happy birthday, something, you know, it doesn't have to always be buy now. And I think that's where a lot of people miss the mark on rehash, is they think it's got to be call to action, fill up the board. Mm-hmm. But the call to action, fill up the board will be typically the result of doing it right, you know, time and time again for a while.
Yeah.
Eric, one of the things the wizard says is when their hearts and their minds will follow.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. And then, and inform them, right? Like they don't know what they don't know. And I guarantee they don't know if you're a plumber, they don't know about their pipes. They don't know about water filtration. They don't know about salt delivery for water filtration. They, you know, or changing your filters and getting a subscription plan, making your life easier, your convenience, like, you know, like just inform them and listen to their needs and then be ahead of it. And I think that's the one thing about marketers in general is, the really great ones are 10 steps ahead of the consumer. They're thinking of like, okay, what's the action point? What's the reaction? What's going to happen in the market, you know? And always thinking ahead. And that's really what you have to do as a business owner. You have to say, yes, this is right here, right now. But what's going to happen? Like, what can I do to get back into the door? What can I do to, you know, really nurture that relationship and keep it going? And even with gift cards for birthdays, flowers for birthdays, you know, handwritten notes, like those things matter so much. And, you know, they don't always have to be expensive, but yeah, it will. Yeah.
Well, I think too, putting, you know, anticipating what our customers need in advance, understanding what solution that they're really trying to solve for, and then building your messaging and your strategy around that, and also having it in advance so that we're not reacting. Mm-hmm. We're talking, not yelling. and building that relationship with them. That's totally on point.
Yeah, I think the constant call to action of like an offer, 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 offer. You're right, that's yelling. Like you're yelling at the consumer to like taken action on something that they're just either they don't understand because they said no, right? That you didn't have enough content, or they are still just wrapping their head around like, this is what, right? Just as we think of ourselves, we are marketers and not everybody has the same thoughts as we do. And we're like, oh, well, why wouldn't you think of this? Well, it's what you don't know, you don't know. So yeah, I think it's really important just to keep that conversation going. So let's jump in. So you're using Marketing Pro a lot for your customers. And, you know, I always wonder, I see like a lot of people hook into APIs and different integrations into their systems. And from a marketing perspective and a compliance perspective, what do you think about having, you know, so many different connection points inside of your CRM and the way that compliance is going today?
So I think that when you're trying to, you create a bottleneck operationally for your marketing department. That's one, because you're here and there and there and there and there and there. And like you're recreating work versus streamlining it. Also, you have breaks in data. And so you're not able to fully understand where's your cost per lead by campaign. And now it's getting even more nimble. We have more opportunities in marketing to be nimble and optimize, and i.e. really affect the lines of business quickly. And if you're integrating all of that into one source, then you can snapshot it and make real-time decisions that positively impact your business. So example of that, having your coffee, and you're like, okay, plumbing needs more leads, or oh no, we need more demand calls in HVAC. Well, you look at what campaign, you know, this cost per lead here, this cost per lead. Oh, this is underperforming. I'm overspending here. I can shift this from here. Super easy. Your coffee's still hot. And then by noon, you've made impactful changes that will start driving those leads.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to have that in one place so that you can see it and make those decisions.
Yeah. And I think a lot of business owners don't really understand that marketers have a tab problem.
And so we have a spreadsheet problem. Like, let me write that number down. Hold on.
Like, sometimes I just have to close all my tabs and I'm like, you know what? If I have to reopen them, restart, then I am fine. Like, nothing's going right. But yeah, we have fragmented thoughts and, you know, and they are outlined in how many tabs we have opened. And so having one source to do marketing out of, it really helps. But also like the compliance side, all of my vendors have to be, I'm in California. So all of my vendors have to be GDPR, like at the level that I'm going on, right? CCPA. Mm. Yeah, I know they're going to change it. So I know that I have to go to the top when it comes to compliance. And then I have to make sure that if I have vendors in other states, that they are on my level. Mm-hmm. And they're not on my level or, you know, whatnot, and it's not being passed through, and then I get sued because I'm getting an outside source, right? And they weren't, I didn't know that they weren't compliant because I didn't check that as a marketer or a business owner. You know, there are so many things that I was thinking about when it comes to API integrations, and it's not that they're bad. Like, they're not bad. It's just that you're creating more chaos for your marketer, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And you're taking your data in and out and then making sure that it comes back in. And some people will just take it out and they'll send it and then they won't put it back in properly. And so am I in compliance with inputs? Am I in compliance with, you know, if people opt out? You know, these are all really important things for marketing. And I think that, you know, we forget to ask those questions when we just give people our data. Another thing with APIs is we are giving people our data.
I tell you how many times I've been asked to make legal decisions in marketing. I'm like, I don't know. Like, yeah, wouldn't trust me, that's for sure.
But, I'm like, can you talk to a lawyer?
I'm like, let's copy what. Another on that point too is anyone that's looking to recap or sell, one of the big things that they use to assess the value of the company is risk. And if, as marketers, you're like going to your marketing person for legal advice, you have some risk.
Yeah.
Most definitely. And then switching over to, I really want to talk about AI and how you're leveraging it, because I know I was like, hey, Amber, you should be doing this. Like,
thank you for that too, because now it's totally like, we'll just run for AI.
Yeah. So tell me about A, how you're using AI in your business, but then also how you see the home service industry could use AI as an opportunity in their businesses.
Okay. So, well, as a marketer, I've used AI for proofing, for writing things, for writing catchy subject lines, for proposals, for ads, for, I don't use it graphically yet because it's not hitting the mark there, but as me looking at the customer journey, I see AI in call center performance, measuring, you know, what's being said when, helping us rate our call center people and understanding like where we need to provide them extra training, because that's a huge gap and kind of a hurdle that sometimes prevents growth because it is labor intensive without the use of AI. I've also seen AI, and I mean, I'm also seeing AI in training technicians and recording their calls real time and giving them triggers and identifying where they have gaps or what they could be saying and aligning, you know, their calls with a top performer's calls and identifying the variances and using that as training opportunities. There's tons of improvements. And of course, AI has been used by Google for optimizing paid search and campaigns. I think it just has kind of a different name now in that regard. But streamlining those tools, and our workforce has continuously gotten more and more expensive in the United States. And those being able to, you know, like leverage AI to kind of help offset those labor expenses and drive efficiencies is really going to help small businesses continue to get ahead and compete. Because as a small business, you are more nimble. And you're able to like make decisions on the fly, and that really, you know, and I think is the American dream, and also it's what allows smaller businesses to be more profitable than bigger businesses, more competitive.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of ways I think that the folks can use AI to become more efficient. And I think a lot of times folks like to try to think too hard about how to do it, but there's so many things just sitting right in front of us that we can use AI, like setting up a Zapier integration with ChatGPT to respond to Google reviews. How many listeners out there have their CSRs or a dispatcher or someone in the office responding to Google reviews? That doesn't need to be a thing anymore. I mean, we could get really nerdy about this, but you could have a preset prompt that even is like, this is our brand voice. Here's the words that we tend to use in our gratitude. And it'll be probably better than what the CSR writes grammatically. You know, little things like that, that people don't think about, using Zapier to send Slack notifications to people automatically each Monday and each Friday, rather than a human doing it. That way you can focus, you know, the big money brain power that's needed towards real problems in the business, and not how am I going to respond to this Google review?
Yeah. I will say, like, going out on my own as a business person, I use AI way more than I did 2 years ago because I'm done with that. It's like, I didn't, you know, things different. You got to be like, agile.
Yeah. I could tell you what AI I use, but like, you'd be like, you're a nerd, and I am a nerd. But you know, image creation is probably something that I really enjoy using it for, mainly because stock photos are really expensive, and learning, you know, how to get great quality images, that's just fun for me with the prompts. And then also video. You know, I've been testing out the ChatGPTs for video, and they're phenomenal. This new Sora that's coming out good Lord, like everyone developed an app. I'm just like waiting for access is how I feel. Show me what I can do. But I mean, think about how much time it takes for us to make content, or those that don't even make content, you know, and now it's just like, boop, like, you know, we just have to jump on the opportunity.
Have y'all tried Opus Clip yet?
No, I was waiting for you to give me the sign in.
Oh my gosh. Opus Clip. I'm not sure. I think the domain is opusclip.something. Just Google Opus Clip. OPUSCLIP. It is insane. So we have a client that we manage a podcast for. Hour-long video. I uploaded it to Opus Clip, and it took a grueling 10 minutes. I was like, oh, I was getting so impatient with this computer. It took 10 minutes. And within that 10 minutes, it came back to me with, I think it was 10 ready to use clips with the captions on the video. You could change the colors to match your brand. It gave you a caption to use in the social post, and you could download the video right then and there. And I was like, oh my gosh, this would have taken a human 3 to 5 business days. And I just got this done in 10 grueling minutes where I had to sit here and wait for this darn computer to load. And it was funny because like at first when I said 10 minutes remaining, I was like, oh my gosh, it's taking forever. But then I got to thinking, like once I saw the output, I was like, that would have taken a human literally probably 3 business days or more to turn around that many clips with the captions. And it's incredible. Like, and there's so many tools like that out there. And so many people think, oh, well, I used AI to write blog articles. No, like there's so much more that you can do with it. And I'm just, every time I find a new AI tool, I'm just like, what's next? I would have never thought of that. That's incredible. Like Opus Clip.
Yeah. Yeah. Opus Clip is cool. Lots of cool tools out there, and they're just getting better, right? Because they're learning from our inputs because they're large language models. And so like when we give them, just like Google, when we feed Google information, like it likes to eat, and now they're saying it likes to, it's neat. So they added notability and transparent, who cares? Whatever. Google likes to eat, right? and so whenever you're thinking about AI, it's like you want to feed it information as much as you can with very, you know, detailed inputs so that you can get a great detailed output. And I think that's like the best tip. It's sometimes I just put my own brain thoughts right into there, and I'm sure it's crazy, but it gives me what I'm looking for, right? Instead of just saying create a image of a black cat, I'd be like, create an image of a black cat with its fur standing straight up, you know, on a background, on a fence, walking in a backyard, and being like super, super particular, because like I said, your input is only as good as your output. And it's the same with data, right, Amber? Like what I've seen with the data side, not with AI, but like when we're talking about input and output, you're in a CRM pretty much all day. So what have you seen as an opportunity or a win when it comes to the input of data?
Well, I mean, what goes in comes out, and really understanding your dad. I'm from Ohio. Your data from the customer experience from marketing all the way through to booking to average tickets, the warranty calls, the callbacks and all that is super important for really operationally running your business and efficiently running your business, because there's leakage at every point. But sir, I wanted to ask you guys, because I'm probably a little behind the eight ball on AI. What are some of your favorite like editing tools? What are some of your favorite or your most impactful tools that you've seen in the industry? Eric, you mentioned Opus Clip. Sarah, you mentioned some that were editing graphics or creating graphics.
Yeah.
What did you have the most success with?
So I use a lot of Midjourney and a lot of DALL-E, and I test a lot of the plugins because I like to see what's going on. And just like Google, there's spam that's coming out and hitting all of these plugins and ChatGPT in general. And we knew that was going to happen. So I use Midjourney a lot. I use a lot of Canva if I wanted to use magic erasers. They also have a new AI tool for video, so it'll create video really quickly for you. I have tested Gamma.ai, which makes landing pages for you and presentations. Love that one. Yeah, I have a whole, you know, I make books at marketing summits and I'm like, here are all the AI tools that I've played with. I won't be doing it at this one, but yeah, I've been watching a lot of TikTok videos because they're all testing and becoming these affiliate marketers and then using Sandstore, which is also a really interesting concept. And that's not AI, but it is like an easy way of purchase path. So yeah, like, I mean, anytime I find a new tool, I'm working with it and playing with it. And even in my own video editor, Filmora and Wondershare, I use the AI portions of that to see what it'll clip me with. But Opus mm-hmm. was one that I was really excited to learn. And then there's one that just like you can put in any YouTube video. I believe it's called Knap, K-N-A-P. Any YouTube video and it cuts it for you and then you can post it, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah, we've been using, I've got them all pulled up here, Opus Clip, which is really good. There's one called Reloom.io, which helps create, gosh, I probably shouldn't be giving away all my secrets. It helps create sitemaps and UX UI wireframes, which is really cool. It's not the best quality wireframes, but the sitemap's really cool. So that you don't have to sit there and like MindMeister or like a mind mapping software sitting there trying to like map out a sitemap. You just tell them like, I run a $3 million HVAC business and we offer plumbing, heating, and air conditioning. And we specialize in, you know, heat pumps and dual fuel systems located in Virginia Beach, Virginia, blah, 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 blah. Please create, you know, and you do a prompt like that. And then it will prepare you a sitemap, kind of map out like how the website should be structured, which is really cool. And there's another one called originality.ai. This is more of a AI checker / plagiarism checker that we use that I've found to be a little bit more accurate than some of the free ones. This one does cost, I think, $9 a month. But I use this personally to go back behind, you know, content that even we produce or is on sites that we're looking at, especially like if we're taking over a website to do SEO on it. I like to see like upfront, like, all right, how much of this is AI, how much needs to be either rewritten or trashed. And originality.ai, you can put the full website URL in and it will scan the entire website. It'll tell you how much of the site and which pages could be like rewritten possibly. So those are the three ones that I've been using a lot lately.
Nice. Yeah. So many tools, and they're tools. The other biggest thing for me is the GPTs mm-hmm. and creating your own. So I've created a fractional CMO that has inputs. It does everything that a fractional CMO would do, but at the same time, like I could literally just take a screenshot of an audience and put it inside of the custom GPT, and then it'll give me basically a memo to my team. It'll give me more channels that I can market this with. And then it'll prompt me and ask me for call center scripts, technician scripts, FSR scripts, right? Because I know that I need content for the full journey. And then scorecards and goals and industry benchmarks for all of those things. So really thinking about like, as a marketer, what do you do? And then understanding that it's not just a one, like you only asking it for one thing, like keep asking it more questions and then put that in your custom GPT so that you can create that experience for any marketer to have a best friend. And that's what I call it. I'm like, oh, this is my marketer.
He's my best friend. I think that, you know, we have a small businesses and medium, small, and our clients do as well. And with that, you a lot of fractional jobs. And when you have fractional jobs, you don't have people that are all in or 100% skilled in that role. And all these tools help us have that knowledge base and really like benefit mm-hmm. our company without like having to have a full-time graphic mm-hmm. designer or video editor. And, you know, it helps us be competitive and also just really be like more holistically sound in what we're offering. and what we're delivering, yeah, because it kind of balances out our gap that we can't fill because we're not a huge company. And then each company, you get like ground down and like trying to get things done. So
yeah,
like, I think it's really amazing and will really benefit, you know, our space in many ways.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I agree with you. Okay, I'm going to ask a random question to wrap this up. If you were required to have a job of some type, but you didn't need the money to survive, what job would you choose?
Yoga instructor.
Nice.
Because I would love to be able to, like, I really believe yoga helps empower people to heal themselves, body, mind, and soul. And that is kind of, you know, at the end of your life, what really did you do? So, I mean, from a marketing standpoint, I feel that what we do is help provide really good companies a way to provide for really good people that want to work hard for the future for their lives and children. And that is a driving force for me. And, you know, who I'm partnering with now, I'm being very selective to make sure that that aligns with them too. And that we're really, like, you know, thinking about that in our daily decisions. And, you know, we're affecting the next generation by giving their parents a way to provide for them that, you know, the trades maybe, you know, didn't always have. So that's kind of my driving force. But probably yoga instructor, because I kind of feel like I do the same thing. It's just totally different ways.
Yeah. Well, yeah. That's awesome. Awesome. Okay.
Yeah.
I was waiting for you, Eric. I hear you breathing and I was like, you're going to say.
Well, I started thinking about what I would do, but I don't know.
Yeah. What would you do, Eric?
I'd still be doing the same stuff. I think I'd just be building websites and doing my thing. Or no, I know exactly what I'd be. I'd be a franchise owner of a Red Robin. That's what.
That's funny. You could just have Red Robin every day.
Right? Yeah, exactly. I would love
it. I would just be an influencer of Red Robin instead of a franchise owner. Because
yeah.
Then I would have the problem.
Right?
Yeah.
Absolutely. And living on a beach. Yes.
Sarah, what would you do?
You know, I want to say that it would obviously be something that would turn my brain off. But I don't know how long I could turn my brain off. I thought about mm-hmm. a job where I would just pet animals all day, be like, hey, reach out. But yeah, I would always want to be in a space of helping someone, but more with a passive income. I think the goal for me is to have a passive income instead of one that I'm just like grinding every single day for. And yeah, that's what I'd like to see is just something that's like, oh, I just automated this and we'll see you later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get a break from the relentlessness.
Yeah, most definitely. And, you know, like you said before, is you only have so much time. And sometimes we look at time as a trade-off or a sacrifice. And when we start looking at it as a sacrifice, then we know that we need to readjust our mindset to make it a trade-off. And you only have so much time in life. And so I just want to do something fun and not rack my brain. Well, Amber, it was great having you on the show. I really appreciate you coming on and you provided some wonderful insight. We are so excited to know you and hear more about your success coming down later in the road.
Well, thank you guys all for what you're doing for, you know, this industry and everyone that's involved in it. And it's, you know, it's their life. It's the children's life. And, you know, it's coming mm-hmm. together and doing things like this to help them is like, that's amazing.
Awesome.
I'm just so happy to be part of it. So thanks for including me.
Yeah. With the trades, for the trades. All right. Well, that's the end of the episode. We will see you all later.
And that wraps up another episode of The Trademark, where we bridge the worlds of the trades and marketing one story at a time. We can't wait to see you next time. Thank you to the trades for giving back big, loving big, and taking massive action. Don't forget to join us next time for more engaging conversations and innovative ideas. If you enjoyed today's episode, please leave us a review and share it with your colleagues and friends in the trades and marketing. Your support means the world to us. Stay connected with us off the air by following us on social media. We'd love to hear your thoughts and get your feedback. Until next time, keep making your mark in the trades. Thank you for listening to The Trademark. Goodbye for now. And remember, we're with the trades for the trades.